I don't want everybody to vote. Elections are not won by a majority of people. They never have been from the beginning of our country, and they are not now. As a matter of fact, our leverage in the elections, quite candidly, goes up as the voting populace goes down.
The billionaires don't want you to vote this year. We'll send you a message that's loud and clear that the votes can't be counted in your community. Why even register? Don't waste your energy. Don't go to the polls on election day, because we bought the election and it better go our way. And on election night, we'll sit back and gloat. The billionaires don't want you to vote.
Welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. Check out the website, therickSmithShow.com. Take you back to the good old days, 1980, right there with Paul Weyrich, the guy who co-founder of the Heritage Foundation, telling 20,000 Baptist ministers, no, you don't want those people, everyone voting, just the people in your pews who you control. That's who we want voting, so we can have our insanity pushed to the forefront, and you push all those other people down so you know that they don't get their what they want. And it goes back to when I was in high school, and the government teacher said the same thing. Look, don't bother voting. Makes my vote that much stronger. And I look at what happened in 2000. You had George's big brother Jeb making sure that a bunch of people didn't get to vote. And I haven't heard much about it since Jeb !! Announced, which is why we've asked Bob Wiener. He's a national Democratic strategist, also a former Clinton White House spokesperson. Bob, thanks for taking time for us.
It's a pleasure, Rick, and what you've done and still do with your show is really a remarkable contribution, so thanks for having me on.
I appreciate that. But, you know, I go back to 2000, and I got to tell you, I think the Supreme Court jumping into the middle of the 2000 election and coronating and igniting George W. Bush as president was probably one of the most destructive things that we have seen in this country.
Well, I would like to refer our listeners to the op-ed. We had a feature in the Des Moines Register, which after we wrote it, Jeb sank 5 points in the polls and grew into the tie that he now is. It's his elephant in the room. His role in the Bush v. Gore recount, where he took the election from Al Gore by instructing Catherine Harris to slow walk it and calling Rove and calling the Bush campaigners and strategizing with them after he said he would be recused, his staff said he would be recused, and he said in response to the records that we found and that the Los Angeles Times found of 95 phone calls, I don't have a clue, and the Des Moines Register reported he refused to comment. It's just nonsense and typical of this non-charismatic but vicious guy underneath who's a corporate sympathizer. So that's what you got with Jeb Bush.
Yeah, let me ask you this, because, you know, going back to that period, I remember over the last number of years, I've had Greg Palast on who did some investigative reporting down there and uncovered this whole Choice Point thing where they went and they purged like 90,000 people from the voting rolls. In fact, there was one guy that Palast found that hadn't, and this was 2000, that was going to commit a crime in 2007. So they purged his name from the rolls because they knew in the future, he probably was in like high school or something, they knew in the future that he would commit a crime.
The U.S. Commission on Civil Rights called the Florida election officials, including Jeb and Catherine Harris, gross dereliction and injustice, and they said that even though black voters represented only 11% of ballots cast, over half of the supposedly spoiled ballots were cast by African-American voters. What they did was, the election commission said it, a confluence of circumstances that indicates intimidation and harassment of the Florida voters. So that's what you got with Jeb Bush, is somebody who's going to push voter suppression and stop Democratic votes.
So now that you put it in that frame, that's exactly what the Republican faithful, I think, wants.
Well, yes, but thinking Democrats and independents don't. And so Jeb is a flawed, failed candidate because of his last name, but also because of the legacy of what they did with Iraq and the economic crash and the fact that they would go back to deregulation. You know, with Jeb, when he says of Hillary, it's the same agenda under a different name, my God, that's what he is. You know, and if you're talking about the same agenda of what got us 23 million new jobs and peace and the debt reduced for the last 3 years, a balanced budget, that's pretty darn good. And so I'm not quite sure it's such a bad thing to go back to the same agenda on our side. But the agenda on their side means tax cuts, tax cuts and tax cuts for the rich and deregulation. And this, and the, I've done a piece in the Miami Herald on this, on the failure of trickle-down economics, which shows that, that if you give tax breaks for the rich, it's one-fifth of the bang for the buck that you get out of direct jobs programs, which they refuse to enact any infrastructure jobs programs because it would be a success for Obama. One-fifth as successful as direct jobs programs, which every administration has done regardless of party, except for this current Congress, which blocks it. So that's what you got with this guy. It's a failed policy. It's taken us back to failure, and it's taking you to the continuation of what both Bernie and now Hillary Clinton are talking about, of increasing income disparity and taking the United States from being its leadership position in the world.
You know, if, and to highlight the point of, if you think Jeb exclamation point, which I got to tell you, I love the Jeb exclamation point, because I got to think that he thinks we're just dumb and we're not going to realize that his last name is Bush.
You know when he used that last, when he ran for governor and lost? So I can't figure out why he did a repeat of that one, which is just going to put in that extra line that everybody writes about, last used when he lost for governor.
But I mean, the thought is, I got to think this was played into it. You don't want anyone to bring in the Bush name. But I find it interesting that when he was asked, who his Ford advisor was, he said his brother.
Right.
Which, right. If that doesn't tell you, we're going right back to the same ideology, the same failed policies, and the same neocon supporters, I don't know what will.
And don't forget, he made Catherine Harris, who was in charge of the slow walk, the campaign chair for his brother. And I just want to keep reminding people, and we're going to push that out in the debates, because if he wants to keep saying, I don't have a clue about the fact that he made 95 phone calls, including to Karl Rove, that's just BS.
Exactly. And that's something I think that has to be continually brought up. And I haven't seen it much, other than a couple of places that I haven't seen it in the mainstream media.
Well, the Des Moines Register is pretty mainstream, and it had a huge impact in the Iowa polling and dropping Bush down. And we also had it, I got to tell you, it was on 20 million viewers on 117 major media websites when we put that out there and wrote the piece in the Des Moines Register. But you're right, it hasn't been picked up. I tried my hardest yesterday to get Rachel and Sue Ducat, the former producer of Washington Week in Review, said this is a natural for Rachel to pick up on Jeb's hypocrisy and lying about his role in Bush v. Gore and to bring it up now. So we're trying our hardest to bring it up in major media, TV, and get it. And we're also going to push it. And if your listeners can also push anybody they know who turns out to be a debate panelist to get them to ask about Jeb's role in Bush v. Gore and why is he saying, I don't have a clue, and refusing to comment.
Do you really think that they're going to allow that kind of a question?
Would they not? It's a legitimate one.
That's the problem, Bob.
If they're going to ask Hillary about Benghazi, which has nothing to do with her, it was some nut who threw bombs into a building and did use the excuse of the movie that they didn't like to rabble-rouse the crowd and then made it a terrorist attack out of that, as the New York Times said, and there's nothing more to it than that, and blame her for that, and by the way, not blame Reagan for the hundreds dead in Lebanon, and not blame Bush for the thousands dead in 9/11, but they're going to blame Hillary for the four dead in some terrorist nut attack in Benghazi. So, I mean, why would you not go back after Jeb's record?
Well, let's talk about Hillary for a second, since you brought her up. I mean, I saw her speech on Saturday.
Yeah, it was good.
Well, it was. Well,
she still is stilted. She's got to speak quicker. She's got to sound more conversational. When she got into the news conference, which I thought was very clever, 2 days later, sort of deflating Jeb's announcement by she's being counter to it, I thought that was pretty good. She was good in the news conference. She's got to be a little more spontaneous like she was there.
Yeah, I agree with you. But, you know, I listened to the speech and I read through it again. It appears to me that Bernie Sanders and Elizabeth Warren, I think, pushing her in a direction that I would like to see, talking about raising the minimum wage, talking about universal pre-K, paid family medical leave, a lot of the very progressive policies that I think would help the working class of this country.
Totally agree. I think Bernie and Elizabeth Warren have made her a better candidate. And I think, by the way, she has had some great policies, and she's evolved on marriage equality. She's come out for universal voter registration and slammed the Republicans by name and specifically in terms of their voter suppression efforts across the country. So I think she's doing all right. I mean, this is so early, And she has said that she's going to be putting out specific policy papers. So did Jeb say. I can't wait for Jeb's. You know, this repeal and replace on Obamacare, they have yet to come up with the replace because they can't figure out
sure
how to fund
do.
It any better than Obama did. And they'll cover, you know, one-third as many people when they come out with a lesser plan.
And
so
that's okay.
There is no replace.
That's the Republican plan. Replace it with a bumper sticker that says pay or die. That's
yeah,
their plan.
There you go.
It doesn't get any simpler than that. That's what they're advocating for. You have the money. You have the money to afford it, or you don't. If you don't, well, shame on you.
And by the way, Rick, you brought up Hillary. The one thing I want to bring up, this Clinton Foundation thing too, because Clinton money and the foundation. It is such a ludicrous argument from the people that brought you Citizens United, and they're taking the unlimited billions from the Koch brothers to help the oil companies and the pharmaceuticals and the casino interests. Taking that unlimited money and getting a 5-4 decision by Republican appointees that make anonymous money legal in campaigns, and they take it. And then they want to blast the Clintons for taking money that goes to Haiti and AIDS and health care and fantastic causes around the world.
Well, they're trying to deflect, Bob, and I understand that. But here's the thing. I mean, Hillary does have some negatives, and there are folks who would want to take her to task. I'm sure I've got one guy who says she's a war hawk and someone who's going to, you know, not be much different than George W. Bush.
She has come around on that one when Carville said to my wife and me a year before she said it that what she's got to say is if she knew then what she knew now, there wouldn't have been a vote, and she would have voted against it. It took her too little, too late, and Obama was able to drive a truck through it. And I wrote Hillary a very detailed letter on that, and she's come around on that one, Rick, because she is saying that now, and she's much less of a war hawk than she used to be because of that. And the same on TPP. I think that Bernie and Warren have both pushed her on that one, and now she's come out and said she adopts the Pelosi position, which,
well, let me
by
ask
the way,
you on the
is
other
negative
side of
on
this
the
thing,
TPP.
Because the argument against that would then be, I got to think aptly so, is a little too little, a little too late. I mean, the TPP vote happened. She came out on the Sunday after. Now
well,
we've evolved on the
war
issue.
Well, very much an active issue right now. So she's a week after the first vote, but when Pelosi came out and Hillary now came out that way, she realizes that if she wants a Democratic constituency, she can't be for that.
But the problem then becomes with some, that it would be that, you know, once you're in the office, you kind of forget who your friends are. I mean, I look at President Obama, a lot of forgetting who your friends are. I sat 20 feet from the man. You can trust me. We're not going to pass free trade agreements.
Can I remind you what Obama said about NAFTA when he was running for office?
Exactly.
He said the exact same words Hillary did. I have concerns. I have concerns about workers' conditions. I have concerns about the environment. We'll have to assess it when it's the final thing. And then he's, you know, big and strong, and he comes out for trade agreements.
And that's what a lot of voters, Bob, are upset with.
Obama did the very same thing.
That's the thing a lot of voters are concerned about, Bob. They're concerned that what's going
to
happen is you get all these promises, you hear it all, and then it evolves or changes. Obama said he was going to renegotiate NAFTA. And maybe this TPP is a renegotiation of NAFTA, only making it worse.
You know, in a way, that's why I'm glad Trump is so candid, so forceful about the crappy negotiating that Obama has done.
Yep.
And his points on both Mexico and, you know, and all that, and China. Actually, you know, for all of his babble and all of his narcissism, nativism, and nonsense, as Axelrod said, I loved how he put it that way, he actually had something to say about Mexico and China that nobody else says, and the strategy of good negotiations.
You mean they're rapists?
Well, it's a bit over the top, but there is a point to who Mexico, who the people are that come over here. They're not the ones that are succeeding in Mexico, obviously. They're the ones who are not.
Most of them are the ones that are starving, trying to find, eke out a meager existence, working in our fields, picking our produce.
Let me tell you something that I say on every radio show I'm on, Rick, and I'll say it on yours too, and yours is unique. but what I want to point out is that, you know, there's been a negative flow, and USA Today pointed it out. There have been more people going back to Mexico than the ones coming over here because our job situation has not been fruitful.
It's true.
So immigrants go so if we want to say we need protection at the border, we actually already got it. There's less people coming than going. And so we've just got to work so hard to create the jobs And the way to create jobs isn't tax breaks for the rich and trickle down. It's infrastructure programs.
There you go. Absolutely right. Last question I've got for you. You know, what kind of, where do you see the I'm really looking at the Republican debate structure. I'm really looking at that. Is it going to be the circus event that we all think it's going to be? Or do you see the party pulling something out of the hat saying we don't want a 2012? Because the way I'm looking at it with everybody in, this has got to be better than 2012.
Well, right now, Trump is in and Kasich is out, which is stupid. It's the first ones in Ohio. Fox is trying to take over New Hampshire and Iowa's roles, and the New Hampshire union leader guy said that he's not going to let it happen. He's going to have his own forum, and he's got people agreeing to it. So that's a very flux situation. You can't have legitimate, and Santorum, who came in second, wouldn't make the cut of the top 10 now. So I don't know what they're going to do with that one. They've got to probably have two debates over 2 hours and include everybody in. I think that's where they're going to land. And if Fox doesn't do it, then CNN will fill it in, or C-SPAN will.
Yeah, I've been pitching this idea of like a March Madness type debate schedule where we just have debate offs. it's my view on it. But Bob, I appreciate you taking time for us. I'd love to have you come back as this continues down the road.
It's a pleasure.
And give the Hillary side. Thanks, man.
Well, I'll give the progressive side, and hopefully Hillary's part of that. So thanks, Rick.
All right. Thanks so much, Bob Wiener. Democratic strategist, former Clinton White House spokesperson. A quick break, right back. Stick around. You'll listen to The Rick Smith Show.
A boy with a gun. I got a picture in my pocket of a lucky one. I'll announce the winner on the radio. With my microphone, I do a super show. I wear a cowboy hat. It is my business hat. I'm on till 1 a.m. I must tell you that. I'm a man with a mission.
The Rick Smith Show, changing America for the better.